crops up in many branches of physics. Electrostatics, for example, right? So electrostatics, and then certain kind of special fluid problems, and then two-dimensional gravity without sources, stuff like that. Now, something remarkable happens if you combine this fact with the fact that you can do conformal changes of variable to generate new functions. From a given holomorphic functions, you can generate an infinite number of new functions, right? You're only limited by your imagination, right? For example, you know, this change of variable could be this, sum omega to the power n. N could be arbitrary. You could just come up with all kinds of holomorphic changes of variable, so given a holomorphic function, you can generate an infinite number of new holomorphic functions. And each of these new holomorphic functions will have a real part and an imaginary part. And each of these real and imaginary part will satisfy Laplace's equation. So if you have a solution to one solution to Laplace's equation, you can generate an infinite number of solutions to Laplace's equations. So too bad that the world is not two-dimensional, because otherwise there would be nothing to do for us. Laplace's equation would be solved and, you know, we'd be set. You know, there would be no outstanding problems in physics. Well, that's not quite true, because these Laplace's equation doesn't really cover all physics, but it covers quite a bit, right? So now let me just kind of go back to the Cauchy-Riemann equation and mention that if you are given the real part of a Cauchy-Riemann equation, and you said that, okay, this comes from a real part of a holomorphic function, then the Cauchy-Riemann equations allow you to find the imaginary part and vice versa. And so let's do a simple example. So let's take u to be this function. So we are told that this is u. What is v? So you basically do algebra for 10 minutes. So this is going to be 4y. So I'm terrible at doing algebra, so please. So you first work out what the x and y derivative of u are. And then telling us that the Cauchy-Riemann equation tells us that this has to be equal to dv by dy, and this guy has to be equal to minus dv by dx. So then you integrate these two equations. When you integrate this equation, you just integrate term by term. But what you get is you get an expression of v, but it has a term which only depends on x, right? Because that term goes away when you take the derivative with respect to y. And when you integrate this equation, you integrate term by term, but you also get a term which only depends on y. So you now have two different expressions for v, and you create those expressions and you find out unambiguously what those two terms are. And okay, let me just write that down. V is sorry, I should really write 6 here. So if you work this out, so you get some function, which is a function of x that you get from this equation. And so you get another expression for v, which is x to the power 4 minus 6 y squared x squared plus c2 of y. So if you equate these two expressions, then you get an expression for v, which is x to the power 4, y to the power 4, plus, sorry, minus 6, x squared and y squared. So there is, anyway, this. So this is, so this is the way that you find out. Given just the real part or the imaginary part of a holomorphic function, you can find the whole function. Okay, so the next thing, very important thing that we are going to discuss is integration of complex functions or holomorphic functions or functions which are not so holomorphic. So what do I mean by that? So holomorphic functions are nice functions, but actually we are interested in functions which are not holomorphic on the entire complex plane. So give an example of a function which is holomorphic on the entire complex plane would be this, right? but there are functions, very interesting functions, which develops isolated singularities on the complex function, on the complex plane. And those are very useful and interesting functions. And they play an important role in evaluating integrals using complex analysis. So anyway, so the first thing that we need to discuss integration on the complex plane, we have to define what a contour is. So a contour is just a piecewise, it's a piecewise smooth curve. So what I mean by piecewise is that, so this is a smooth curve. Now this is a piecewise smooth curve, so it's got some kinks, and so we usually parameterize a curve by some real number. So what is a curve? A curve phi is a map from some interval, and A and B can be the same point. To some open set, you know, in the complex plane. Now let T, so suppose T is the parameter, right? So T ranges from A to B. As T ranges from A to B, you move around on the complex plane, and that's phi. So I'll be mostly interested in curves which are non-self-intersecting. So for example, let's take a very simple curve, which is a circle of radius r centered around the origin. So such a curve would be parameterized by e to the power it. So this, as you go around, where t is goes from 0 to 2 pi. Now, if I had instead of this, if I had e to the power I, say, 2 of t, then that would be roughly an example of what I mean by a curve that intersects itself. So I'm not going to deal with those curves right now. So once we have defined what a contour is, it's time for us to define what a contour integral is. So we don't know what an integral is on a complex plane yet. So the suppose phi is a contour and f of z is a holomorphic function. It doesn't have to be, but let's just take that. Then this is defined, so I'll use mathematician's notation, as the integral from A to B of the function evaluated along the curve . This is the derivative of phi with respect to its argument times ct. So this is the definition of a contour integral. Right? If everything involved here was real, then this would not be a definition, right? This would be like a trivial statement. This would be a statement, for complex integrals, this is the definition of a contour integral. So once we have this definition, let's do a contour integral. Okay. I think these guys need to be calibrated. So this is the front. Go up. Good. Go up a little bit more. I think PI should get like one of these headsets where, you know, which you can, it reads your mind and you can just like, shh. Okay, so let's take our contour to be the circle of radius r around the origin, and take our function to be the simple function. Just gonna check the time. Okay, I have about 8 minutes left. So then, what is this integral then? So if we take our definition, so the definition tells us that we have to integrate from 0 to 2 pi, and z to the power n is r to the power n e to the power I of n of t, and then we have to take the derivative of phi, and that gives us with respect to t, so that gives us I r e to the power I t, and then d of t, because this is an integral over t, we can factor out the r's and the I, so I r to the power n plus 1, and we have 0 to 2 pi e to the power I n plus 1 of t over dt. Now this factor is 0 unless the integrand is 1, which happens for n equals to minus 1. So that means that this is 0, sorry, I should write it in the form. It is 2 pi I if n is minus 1, 0 otherwise. So, because when n is minus 1, this also goes away. So, then we have the quite surprising, well, I find it surprising, obvious but surprising result that so all the other, this integral for all the other choices of the integrand vanishes. So I'm just going to state this, which is the fundamental theorem of calculus. And what it says is that, I'm just going to try to, I'll just go over there. In the last few minutes, so if you have some holomorphic function f in some open set U, and so you have some holomorphic function, so this is holomorphic in some open set U, I don't know if it's, yeah, and, right. And that, suppose phi is a curve. Phi is a curve in this open set. So phi is a curve in this open set. And suppose that there exists another function, f, in this open set such that the first derivative of f is equal to the function f, the holomorphic function f that we originally considered, then the integral of our holomorphic function along this curve is given by this expression. So in particular, if a and b are same, so if it's like a if the integral is on this, say on a circle, then the right hand side, you know, vanishes. So now if you go back to our example where we integrated 1 over z over a circle, and we got 2 pi I, that means that for such a holomorphic function, we don't really have a corresponding f which is continuous. Right, so I think one of the conditions is that f has to be continuous. And this is related to the fact that the log is not a single valued function on the complex plane. So this next time we'll get more into the integration and hopefully we'll do some examples. And so any questions so far?